on an island. It's a caldera, the crater of a volcano. And we're right on top of it. These trees, this forest, everything's made steamy and warm because we're right smack on top of an active volcano. Oh, this is so not good.
8. Cathar. Loren is upset about something. I think she does not like the land. Something about it frightens her. I took her to my favorite spot, high in the trees, because I love gazing out at the world and imagining what it is like beyond our home. I like the view and the cool breeze that moves this high above the land. But instead of being surprised or pleased at what I have shown her, she has grown pale and worried. There are shadows in her eyes, and she looks unhappy. She keeps pointing to the thick ever-present mist in the firelands and saying strange words. I will not take you there, I reassure her. I know it is dangerous. Trust me. She does not look happy, but her tense grip relaxes a bit when we descend back down into the canopy. There is no more time for sights. I need to take her to the clan home before it grows dark and the night flyers grow active with their hunting. So down we go, moving through the trees once more. She trembles against me as I do so, and it makes my body remember that we are resonating. Perhaps I should take her somewhere more private than the clan home. Not this night, I decide. Jachelle will need help with the kit. They will need food. Mating with her somewhere private will have to wait just a bit longer. I feel a pang of annoyance at the thought. It cannot be helped. The safety of all must come first. But that does not mean I cannot resent it, just a little. It is nearly dark when the carved-out hollow of the clan home becomes visible. Our tree is not quite as spacious as the coral-surrounded clan home of Tallhorn, or the cave cliffs of Shadowed Cat, but it is easy for us to climb to, and easier to defend from predators. I worry that it will not be safe for her with its woven platforms and snug dens. I make my way to the top platform and then set her down gently. She whimpers, clinging to my neck.
Don't drop me!
It is all right, I reassure, stroking her hair. This is home. We are safe. I touch my fingers to her chin. Wait here. The moment I turn away, she lets out a cry of protest and holds on to my knife belt. I do not go far, I promise, I tell her, and grab one of the carved wooden bowls waiting on the shelf inside the hollow of the tree. I grab a handful of night moss and crush it between my fingers, and it begins to glow. I place it inside the bowl and then offer it to her. You can hold this if you like. She takes it. A surprised look on her face.
Is it glowing?
Light, I tell her, so you can see.
Cathar!
Jachelle calls out from below. A moment later, the kit wails a protest.
Can you come down here and take this one before I tear my own mane out?
Loren stares at me in shock and horror. Her hand goes over her swollen teats.
Are you serious? Naked?
She drops to her haunches on the platform and hugs her knees to her chest.
It's something to wear.
Do not be frightened, I reassure her, moving to her side and crouching next to her. So skittish, my mate, so terrified of everything. Jachelle is a friend. To him I call out, come up. The kit wails again, and I hear the squawk of Fat One joining in. The tree hollow creaks and groans, a sign that Jachelle is climbing up. I get to my feet. Loren realizes this too, and she makes an unhappy noise, shoving the light bowl into my hands and then plastering herself against my back. She wraps her arms around me from behind, and the sound she makes is indignant. Is she trying to camouflage herself against me? I glance down at the pink hands against my chest. But they remain the same color. Does she not realize she cannot turn colors? Has she lost the ability? Jachelle emerges from the tree a moment later, with Zirin in a leather sling against his chest, Fat One perched on his shoulder. He looks tired and frustrated after a day of watching the kit, but pauses at the sight of Loren hiding behind me.
Is that...
He looks at me, shocked.
What is that, Cathar?
It is a female, I tell him proudly, and put a fist to my chest.
Listen,
I resonate to her. His mouth falls open in surprise, and he jiggles the kit against his chest as it wails again.
I do not understand. How? Was she hiding with another clan?
I do not think she is from a clan, I tell him, stroking her hand as she clings to me. I found her in an egg with another female. Arjal took that one.
What? Why?
He gives me a betrayed look.
Why did you not bring another female here? Both Nadek and I do not have mates either.
I know this, brother, but Arjal arrived on the shore at the same time I did. I quickly tell him the story of the strange egg and the females inside. It seemed better to share than to fight. He nods thoughtfully, even as Fat One pushes off his arm, fluttering over to my shoulder and landing there with a thump. Behind me, Loren makes a startled sound as Fat One starts to sniff her.
Did Arjal resonate to the other?
Not that I saw. Jashel's eyes gleam.
What clan was she?
He tries to peer over my shoulder at my female. Now is the time I must explain to him what my Loren is. But I am not entirely sure I know myself. She is of no clan, like my female. And I pull away from Loren, so he can look at her face.
Loren. I am going to straight up murder Cathar for introducing me to his buddy while I'm freaking topless. He moves away from me, leaving me without a humanish shield to cover my nudity, and I bite back my scream of irritation and cup my hands over my breasts. Little warning next time, I bite out at him. The newcomer's eyes go wide at the sight of me. He looks like Cathar, I think, with a similar build. His hair is in one long braid, whereas Cathar's is loose around his shoulders. And he's better looking than his friend. But I'm biased, of course. My cootie ensures that. The new guy gestures at me and begins spitting a stream of syllables at Cathar. Probably a lot of, who the hell is she? I can relate. I want to say the same thing, except no one understands me. They begin talking in low tones, and as they do, I study my surroundings. We're still high up in the trees. Not my favorite place to be, but it's quiet up here, I guess. New sounds are coming out of the jungle with the night, and it doesn't sound entirely safe. So for once, I'm glad we're not close to the ground. This place is odd, though. It's a big tree, fat and broad, and looks as if it's been hollowed out. The inside glows with a faint greenish light, just like the little bowl that Cathar holds in front of him. I guess that's the nighttime light source. Makes sense not to have a fire, being that we're in a tree and all. Something squawks, like a chicken with more bass in its voice, and then hops from Cathar's shoulder onto my bare arm. I fight back a screech of alarm because he has to be a pet. Farley had a big, furry, ugly-ass pony. It makes sense that someone here would have a pet. I'm just not entirely sure what this thing is. The face looks a bit like a cross between a lizard and a cat, and its wings are hairless. There's no tail, and it has a tiny crest arching back from its pointy little head. It has big eyes that gleam like a cat's in the dark, but it doesn't have feathers or fur. The feet clinging to my arm remind me of a bird, though, and it's round and fat and gazes up at me like it's expecting to be fed. Weird.
Kiki,
Cathar says, and makes a clicking sound with his tongue, and the thing makes another rumbling sound of protest and then hops back over to Cathar, abandoning me in favor of moving to his shoulder and preening against his ear. It's like a bird, and for some reason, it warms my heart. He's got a pet bird. Sure, there's no beak or feathers, but the way it flutters its wings? Bird. The claws that dug into my skin without breaking it? Bird. The way it's cooing at him like it expects treats? It reminds me of my own sweet bird that I left behind. I'm hit by a wave of homesickness that leaves me teary. Cathar moves forward mid-conversation, waving off his friend. He touches my face, noticing my distress, and then glances at the way I'm cupping my hands over my boobs. He says something to his friend, who adjusts the baby in his arms. A moment later, Cathar has the leather wrap and offers it to me. Oh. I smile at him through my tears and take it, turning around and wrapping it around my torso. I'll take a makeshift tank top. Already I feel better, and when I turn around, my tears are drying and I'm able to concentrate a little more. Both men are staring at me, the newcomer tilting his head as if he's trying to figure me out as he holds the baby under his arm. Cathar's gaze is an entirely different sort of stare. It's hot and possessive, and speaks of all kinds of dirty things that make me want to press my thighs tightly together. I am so having dirty dreams tonight, I just know it. The new guy gestures at my tits and then the baby. He picks the child up and holds it out in my direction. Oh, hell no. Just because I have boobs doesn't mean I get the kids, I protest, edging toward Cathar. He shakes his head at his friend and taps his chest, then points at my heart. I know what this means. Resonance. The other protests, gesturing at my boobs again, and then the baby's mouth. It hits me. I'm not nursing. I just resonated. That means I can have babies, not that I have all the babies, you doofus. Cathar scowls at him and takes the baby from his friend's hands and tucks him under his arm. He says something to his friend, and the other guy rubs his face, tired. They talk for a little longer, and I realize that neither of them is probably the parent of the little guy. They don't seem to know what to do with him, and as the baby shoves one fist, of four, into his mouth and sucks on it, I wonder where the little one's mama is. Cathar holds him awkwardly, and after a moment I decide to step in. Come on now. Even I did a lot of babysitting when I was a kid. I say, moving forward to take the baby from him. I'm surprised at how solid the kid is. He's a heavy little thing, and the four arms immediately wave in utter delight as I tuck him against my side and rock him back and forth. Three fists immediately pull on my hair, while the other pats my jaw. Well, that can't be helped. He's cute, though, all roly-poly baby fat and light blue skin. As I pick him up, he immediately changes colors to match my skin and gives me a happy, toothless little smile. Okay, that's cute. Where's your mama, little guy? I bounce him on my hip. Is she coming up here? He coos at me and tugs on my hair. Can't be more than a few months old, this little guy. I bet he's a handful. I glance over at the other two, wishing I could understand their low conversation. It doesn't seem like anyone else is coming up, and I eye the tree again. Sure looks like a big home for just two guys. Well, two guys and a random baby. I feel like I'm missing part of the story. No surprise, since no one speaks my language. The newcomer gives me a tired smile and says something to Cathar, then heads back down into the tree. Cathar moves back toward me, and I guess we're alone again. Well, except for the baby we inherited. I keep holding the little guy, and a weird thought occurs to me. Is the kid being left with us because it belongs to Cathar? But that can't be. He resonated to me. I'm ashamed to say I feel a stab of irrational jealousy for a brief moment. It's silly. The cooey in my chest tells me the truth. It's that same cooey that's making me feel jealous over a guy I met earlier today. In my heart, I know I'm being ridiculous. If I sit and think logically, I know this isn't his baby. It's been explained quite clearly to me how resonance works, and if he resonates to me, he won't resonate to anyone else, ever. Resonance is very much a one and done. Now, if my hormones could just chill out and realize that, everything would be great. Except, my hormones really aren't that great at chilling out. Cathar takes the baby from me and begins to rock him, soothing him in the way that someone fairly experienced in such things would. The baby fusses for a bit, and Cathar makes soft clucking noises with his tongue, then produces an enormous egg from one of the baskets propped up against the base of the tree. He carefully punctures a hole in the top of the egg and offers it to the baby like it's a bottle. I'm a little unnerved to see the little guy take it in his hands and suck the contents out. But if there's no mom around, I guess they don't have a lot of feeding options. If there's no mom in the picture, that also explains why it's a couple of guys taking care of a baby. I shouldn't criticize, because the baby looks fat and healthy, and Cathar smiles down at him with a fondness that makes my ovaries do another flip. "What's his name?" I ask softly. Cathar glances up at me, curiosity in his eyes. I point at him. Cathar. Then myself. Lauren. Then I point at the baby. Recognition dawns on his face. He gives the child a jiggle and then sits him up, patting his back. Like any other baby, the little guy squirms and then belches.
"Zarin,"
Cathar tells me. It's so slurred together and said so quickly that I'm sure I won't be able to pronounce it right. But I try anyhow and earn a pleased nod from Cathar. Little Zarin waves a fist at Cathar, smacking him in the jaw and babbling. Cathar immediately reaches into a basket and offers him a little seed pod. The baby sticks it into his mouth and sucks on it, eyes closing sleepily. Is this the jungle version of a pacifier? Cathar offers me one, and I take it because I'm curious. The inside tastes a bit sweet and milky, and it makes my stomach growl. I'm starving, and I'm just now realizing that I haven't eaten anything since I was on the icy shore with the others this morning. It feels like a lifetime since that happened, but it's been less than a day. Jeez. Less than a day, and everything in my world has gone upside down. Again. With the baby tucked under one arm, Cathar gets to his feet and moves toward one of the baskets stacked near the hollowed-out bole of the tree. He digs through the baskets, finds the one he wants, and then offers it to me. I take it and peer inside. There are several fist-sized brown nuts of some kind, and Cathar takes one and cracks it open with his teeth, then offers it to me. Inside, the meat is soft. And when I dip a finger into it, I realize it tastes like peanut butter. Amazing. I pig out on nuts as he rocks the baby to sleep, and by the time Zarin is passed out, my stomach's full and I'm licking the last of nut butter off of my fingers, content. I'm given a pod filled with cool water and I drink it down while Cathar gets to his feet and sets the sleeping baby down in a basket lined with plant leaves and fluff. It's wedged in a hollow between two branches, and he tests it to make sure it's safe before settling Zarin in. I want to protest that a basket in the trees is not the safest spot for a baby, but who am I to judge? I'm sitting on a woven platform, after all. I don't know this place like they do, or I'd have dressed a little better for the occasion. I pluck at the heavy leather leggings and my top. I'm grateful to be covered. But with the steamy heat of the jungle, I feel completely slick with heat and the leather isn't helping. Cathar returns to my side and puts a hand to his mouth, indicating that I should be quiet so as not to wake the baby. I nod. Of course, then the man pulls out a knife and sits down next to me. I breathe, doing my best to keep my voice down. What exactly are we doing with that thing? He reaches for my leggings and angles the knife as if he's going to cut. I slap his hand. No! I whisper. Bad idea. I need pants. just because you're naked doesn't mean I want to be. Well, he's not completely naked. He's wearing a leaf thong of some kind. I always thought something like that would look ridiculous, but he's so big and brawny that he works it really, really well.
Loren,
he says, and there's patience in his voice. Cathar, I say back, mimicking his patient tone. No. He gives me a low growl as if telling me to stop, and reaches for my pants leg again. When I slap at his hand once more, he snags it in his grip and then uses another hand to continue cutting. Well, fuck. You can't get into a slap fight with a four-armed guy. I squirm, quietly protesting as he continues to cut up the leg of my pants, destroying hand-stitched leather seams. Seriously? What are you doing? I hiss at him. I don't want to be naked. The big alien ignores my angry words and continues to massacre my pants. He stops close to my waist, and a lot of my panic subsides when he does. At least he's not stripping me naked. When he begins to cut across, I realize he's making me shorts instead of pants. Oh, well, that makes sense. My skin immediately feels cooler, and I breathe a deep sigh of relief when the heavy, sweaty leather falls away. Definitely. Much nicer. Cathar pats my knee when he's done and releases my hands. I know, I tell him. Thank you. That was thoughtful of you. All communication issues aside, he's trying to help me. And he's right about the shorts being a lot cooler. They're cut to the top of my thigh, and while I'm not really into the whole booty short look, it's not like there's fashion police on this island. No one can see my cellulite but him and his buddy and the baby. I guess that's okay. And Marisol, if we ever find her. God, I feel overwhelmed instantly. Have I abandoned her? Is she gone? Could I have done more to try and find her? I press my hands to my forehead, frustrated to tears. I'm so tired and I feel like I've failed her.
Loren.
Cathar touches my arm, stroking it gently. I lift my head to look over at him. His cooey bright eyes glow in the darkness, and other than the glowing moss, it's the only light in the very dark jungle. I can't look for her tonight, no matter how much I might want to. Tomorrow, then. I still feel like the world's worst jerk, but even I know it's not smart to wander down there at night, not with all the weird noises starting to surface in the jungle below. I'm okay, I whisper to him. Just a little overwhelmed. Wordlessly, he hands me the long lengths of leather he's cut off of my pants and gestures at my top. Right. I can make a top out of all this leather. I'll do that tomorrow. I nod again. Thank you. He grunts acknowledgement of my words and then gestures indicating I should wait here and walks to the edge of the platform. I'm not entirely surprised when he leaps off, because that seems typical of him. I don't know where he's going, though. He returns a brief moment later with armfuls of long leafy fronds and then begins to stack them neatly, making a bed. Ah, well, that makes sense, too. Even though the inside of the tree looks like it's got several hollowed-out ledges and cubbies that would probably make good nests, it's too hot to sleep inside. Out here, at least, there's a breeze. He settles onto the leaves and then lies down, propping up on an elbow and watching me expectantly. Okay, so what am I supposed to do? Make my own bed? I hesitate. Then shrug. When in Rome, and all that. I turn, and before I can step away, he grabs my ankle and shakes his head, indicating I should lie down with him. Ah. So he made a bed for both of us. Gee, you shouldn't have, I murmur dryly. Part of me likes the idea, because while this platform is a good size, it's also not so big that I'm not in danger of rolling off the side in my sleep. At the same time, my cootie's going crazy. I know if I lie down with him, he's going to assume I want to have sex with him. And while my body might be screaming yes, my head is firmly in the no camp right now. I barely know the guy. I'm not ready to jump that far ahead just yet. Even just thinking about sex makes my cootie purr even faster, though. It's so loud that I know he can hear it, and I can hear his responding. Gosh, this is awkward.
Loren.
He pats the bed again. I don't know what to do. Of course, my mind is spinning a mile a minute. What happens if I don't lie down with him? Is he going to drag me there and force me to sleep with him? Then again, what's to stop him from bearing me to the ground and having his way with me anyhow? He's much, much stronger than me, and the fight over my leggings showed me I don't have a chance of standing up to him if he wanted to push things. I shiver at the thought, worried. He tilts his head watching me, and the expression on his face isn't a cruel one, or a frightening one. He looks a little tired, like me, and a little frustrated, again, like me. I'm going to have to trust at some point, I guess. After another moment of hesitation, I move closer and lie down next to him. Not super close, of course. I leave at least a foot between us and keep to the edge of the leaves. Hopefully that will give him the hint. Cathar grunts and immediately pulls me against his side, burying his face against my neck. So much for hints. He nuzzles my neck, rubbing his skin against mine. I have to admit, it feels pretty good. And a little terrifying at the same time. No, I say softly to him and shake my head. No. He studies my face for a moment, then nods, easing his grip on me and lying back. He closes his eyes, and I breathe an enormous sigh of relief. No rape, thank God. I close my eyes and relax, and carefully scoot back to the edge of the leaves again, just in case. Cathar growls low in his throat and pulls me back against him, one hand anchoring at my waist and keeping me pinned at his side. All right, then. I might be hard-headed, but I can take the hint. We get to snuggle despite the heat of the evening. I pat his hand in acknowledgement and close my eyes once more, determined to do my best to sleep. It's surprisingly easy to drift off, despite Cathar's nearness. Or heck, maybe it's because of it. I don't even know. All I know is when he slides an arm under my head and pulls me against him, I decide there are worse things than having him as a pillow, and keep my eyes closed. His hand remains locked around my waist, and I feel his thumb stroke the sensitive skin of my stomach. I ignore that, too. Truth is, he's rather nice to lie against. I feel a little warm, but not overly so. Instead, I feel safe, protected, like nothing's going to happen to me because Cathar's got me. I like that a lot more than I should. Then his hand slides over the center of my belly. Little curls of excitement flare through my body. It's silly, but it makes things feel a bit like we're teenagers trying to make out without anyone noticing. I could push his hand away, give him another firm no, but I'm so relaxed, and he's so nice to lie against that I let it slide. If I'm honest with myself, I'm curious if he's going anywhere with this. I get my answer a few moments later when his fingers dip into the waistband of my shorts, and then he's brushing his fingers over my mound. Well, that escalated quickly. I bite back my gasp of surprise. He gives a little playful chuckle under his breath, and when I put my hand on his wrist, he stops. He won't go any further if I push him away. He knows he's pushing the limits. And I'm pretty sure I'm a terrible person, because for a brief, shining moment, I don't want to push his hand away. My cootie's humming, but more than that, I'm attracted to his playfulness, his strength. I haven't been touched in so long that I'm tempted to see where things go. I don't want sex. He knows I don't want sex. But this isn't really sex, is it? It's just touching, exploring, petting. God, I love to be petted. Affection isn't something I thought I'd feel again, oddly enough. Ever since we've landed on this planet, one thing after another has been thrown at us. I've had to be strong and calm. I've taken Marisol under my wing and tried to be a leader and an example for the others when they were feeling afraid. There's enough panic in a scary situation, I've always reasoned, and the best way to get through one is to help. I knew at some point my cootie would kick in, but I thought I had a long, long time to go. Now I'm being confronted by the fact that my cootie's interested, and it's reminding me that I like to be touched. I've had boyfriends in the past, but I've never had sex. It was never the right time, or he was never the right guy. Gosh, I'm so tired of being level-headed. For once, I want to get my freak on. I want to know what it's going to be like if he touches me and I let him. For a moment, I want to release control and let someone else handle things. I want to be impetuous and wild and not think about tomorrow. Not too impetuous, of course. But maybe just a little? I ease my grip on his wrist with a little sigh, giving him silent permission. My name is a whisper on his lips as he pushes his hand a little lower. He touches the curls of my sex, stroking them and petting them. I realize that they must be different to him, because when I saw him naked, in the quick glimpse that I had, he was all bare blue skin. I don't remember seeing any body hair, actually. I hope he doesn't find mine offensive.
Loren,
he murmurs again, his breath hot against my brow. I'm tiny, pressed up against his massive muscular body, I realize. I probably weigh half of what he does, and I know I'm a good foot smaller than him. I feel dainty and petite in his arms, and it's a rather delicious feeling. My cootie purrs with pleasure, and I relax against him, even though my heart is racing with anticipation. How far are we going to take this, I wonder? Why does that make me so very breathless? Cathar rubs one large finger up and down the part of my folds, leaving me gasping with want. He doesn't explore deeper, just moves that finger back and forth, stroking me over and over, and making me crazy with need. I can feel how wet I'm getting, just at that small touch, and my cootie's going wild in my chest. His is loud, too, but he doesn't seem to be paying a lick of attention to it. His focus is entirely on me. I can feel his mouth pressed against my hair, his grip tight on my waist, but the only thing he moves is his hand, stroking me. Just when I'm ready to go mad and push his hand to the right spot, he pushes just a little deeper, stroking between my folds and slicking through their wetness. I whimper and hold tight to him, clinging to his bicep as he strokes me, exploring my folds and murmuring my name ever so softly. His hand feels enormous as he touches me, and when he grazes the entrance to my core with one fingertip, it takes everything I have not to bear down against him and have him take me like that. But then he moves his hand away again and continues his maddening caresses. I nearly explode when he brushes up against my clit. I've never felt anything so intense. So good. The breath sobs out of my throat, and I can feel him stiffen next to me. It's almost like he's surprised. Has he never touched a woman before? Or is human anatomy different? It doesn't matter, because he continues touching me, rubbing one large finger back and forth against the little nub of sensitive flesh and making me writhe against him. The breath seems to leave my lungs. He gives this deep, sexy chuckle and then teases my clit again, and I clamp down on his hand, gasping as I hit my release. That was fast and intense. I've never come so hard, not even on my own. It feels like my body has tensed into this big knot that slowly, pleasurably unravels as I come and come and come. By the time I catch my breath, I realize what I've done. Oh, man. So much for holding my ground and not letting a stranger touch me. Of course, Cathar doesn't feel like a stranger. I know some of that is just the cootie talking, but I feel like I've known him for a very long time. He feels familiar to me, comfortable. And his hand on my pussy kind of feels like it belongs there, which is also messed up. I let out another soft little sigh that turns into a yawn. I'm a little scandalized by what just happened, but I also feel really good. Like it was the perfect thing I needed after a stressful day, which is also ridiculous. Some of the tension starts to return as I lie next to Cathar, waiting to see what happens next. Is he going to demand reciprocation? Push for us to have sex? Move his hand off of my pussy so I can sleep? He does none of these things, though. He just nuzzles at my hair like he's pleased and relaxes against me. I furtively try to pull his hand away since he's still cupping me between my legs, but he only growls low in a warning and ignores me. Well, all right then. I wait a moment or two longer, unsure, and then relax, little by little. Exhaustion overtakes me, and I lean in against him until my body is pressed against his. We'll talk about his possessiveness in the morning. For now, I'm too tired to protest.
9. Cathar. I have never been so pleased in all of my days. After the death of the Great Smoking Mountain, I thought mine would be a joyless existence, to hunt and care for those that were left until we disappeared, one by one. That there would be nothing but more sadness and frustration in my life. But now, with my mate next to me, her pleasant scent covering my hands and her soft body curled against mine, there is hope once more, and there is joy. With a mate, my tribe has a chance. It will be difficult, of course, to rebuild what we once were. But with a resonance female at my side, at least we have a chance. Before, we had none. She is not yet ready to mate, though. That is all right. As long as she lets me hold her and touch her, I am content to wait until her arms open up to welcome me. It will not be long, I think. Loren sleeps heavily against me, her breathing steady. My hand remains on the curls of her cunt. And I want to touch her again, give her more pleasure, watch her twist in my arms with her need and hear the little pleading sounds she makes. That will wake her, though, and she needs her rest. I will wait until morning, but until then, I will hold her. I do not get until morning, of course. Zeren wails in his basket and wants to be fed before dawn. It is my turn to tend to him, so I reluctantly leave my mate nestled in the leaves and care for the kit. Once he is fed and burped, he wants to play, and so I let him sit in my lap while I weave leaves together for a new loincloth, then work on one for my mate. The leather she wears will be damp and hot in this heat. Leaves are much cooler and can be discarded when needed. I will have to teach her how. Because it is clear she does not know how to take care of herself. I do not mind, though. I look forward to such things. Just as dawn begins to lighten the skies, the mountain lets out an angry grumble. The ground shakes, and the leaves of the trees rustle wildly. I move to my mate's side, and with the kit under one arm, I hold her close, ensuring that she will not fall off the platform. Loren gasps and clings to me, her eyes wide with fear. It will not last long, I promise her. It shakes to let us know it is mad, and then it will eventually stop. I hope. As long as it does not come with smoke and liquid fire, it will be all right. Most of them do not.
Earthquake?
She says, worried.
Should we get down from this?
The shivering of the world stops, and just like that, everything is quiet once more. Nothing calls from the trees, and even the leaves that normally rustle in the breeze are utterly silent. It is done, I tell my mate, and get to my feet and offer her a hand. Come, we will get you something to eat.
Baby okay?
She repeats this and plays with Zoren's little hand, and I realize she is asking after him. He is used to the earthshakes, I tell her. Probably more used to it than I am. They have been more and more frequent. I worry they have something to do with the fact that the jungle grows steamier by the day, but I can only worry over that which I can control. I am pleased that she worries over the kit, though. She will make a fine mother to our young. Loran looks upset, so I do my best to distract her by offering her the loincloth I have woven for her this morning. To my surprise, her face colors the pinkish shade again. The look she gives me is shy, though, and her voice grows soft. When her cooey begins to sing, I realize she is thinking of last night and how I touched her. And then I cannot stop grinning, because I plan on doing so again tonight, and every night, for the rest of our lives. She makes a gesture with her hands and indicates I should turn around. Her insistence is puzzling, but I do as she asks. As my back is turned, she takes off her leathers, and I wonder at her people. They do not camouflage, but do they cover their pink bodies in heavy, sweaty hides like she does? Or is this strange habit Lorenz only? It makes no sense. She calls my name and I turn around, pleased to see that she is wearing the loincloth I've woven for her. It hangs loose on her hips, and I move forward and pull at two of the fronds to tighten it so it holds properly. You look very fine, my mate. I do not point out that she could get rid of the leather wrapped around her torso. She will, in her own time.
Feel naked.
Loren smiles at me and then pats her chest.
Can make one from a top?
One to cover her teats. Of course, I am happy, she asks. She takes the kit from my arms and keeps him busy while I gather more leaves and weave them quickly into a flat square surface to cover her front and weave a second smaller chain to loop around her neck. I offer it to her, but she only holds the kit and bounces him, frowning at me.
Is a placemat, not a top?
Clothing, I tell her, for your teats, and I gesture how she should put it on. She makes a humming noise in her throat, clearly undecided, but then hands me Zoren and puts it on, slipping off the length of leather once the leaves have settled over her swollen teats. Then she pulls her long mane forward and pats it in place atop them, and seems satisfied. Hungry? I ask, miming food. I know she must be. At her eager nod, I gesture that we should descend lower in the tree, through the hollow. Her movements are uncertain, but Loren follows me down through the tree until we reach the lowest level. Even though it is still a good distance off the ground, the platform is widest here. This is where most of the stored food is kept, and where Nadech has been living ever since his leg was hurt. He is here this morning, still lying on his mat of wilted leaves, staring off into the jungle. Fat One sits on the lip of a nearby basket, waiting to be fed. He squawks and flutters his wings, indignant at his hunger. The noise rouses Nadech, and he glances over when I descend with Zoren, and then sits upright, eyes wide, when he spots Loren. She gasps at the sight of him, and moves behind me again. I automatically camouflage at her alarm, and the kit in my arms camouflages as well. How are you this day, my brother? I ask my tribesmate as I set Zoren down on the leaves next to him. I move to the baskets nearby. They have been looking rather flat lately, and I worry we are running out of food. The island is much smaller now with the death of the great smoking mountain, and the game has been scarcer. nuts and eggs not as plentiful. With only myself and Jachelle able to go hunting, there are long periods where we do not have the time to gather anything, and it has taken a toll on our supplies. I cannot complain, though, not to Nadech, who has lost all of his leg below the knee. I am healthy and whole, and I have a mate. Truly, I am the luckiest of males. My female clings to my side, her hand stealing into one of mine for reassurance. I give her a reassuring look and then open the lid on one of the baskets. Nearly empty, the only contents a half-rotten bit of fruit. I fish it out and offer it to Fat One, who snatches it from my fingers with an indignant trill, and then flutters over to Loren's shoulder to roost. She gives a happy little laugh, and her expression is clearly pleased at her new companion. Her tight grip on my hand eases, and I relax, glancing over at Nadech before opening the next basket. Jachelle leave early this morning. Nadech nods slowly, his eyes wide. He cannot stop staring at my female, and I feel a possessive urge to step in front of her and protect her from his gaze.
He babbled about you and the female, but I thought he was talking nonsense to cheer me up.
You know how he loves to make up stories.
I do. Jachelle has tried his hardest to break Nadech from his depression, spending endless hours telling him wild tales to intrigue him, or at the very least, make him smile. He will be pleased that Nadech has shown interest in something this day, even if it is my mate. Of course he is interested, I reason. All hope for a mate for all of us left the day the Great Smoking Mountain died, along with most of the tribe and the island itself. Nearly everything died that day. I think of the earthshake from this morning and my mouth flattens. It cannot happen again. Small shakes are nothing. They have always happened. We will not have another mountain death. There is no mountain left, is there? I think of the smoke pouring into the sea at the far end of the land and frown to myself. I cannot worry about such things. I must feed Loren and Zuren. I will worry about the mountain later.
What is her name?
Nadech asks in a soft voice.
Where did she come from? And what is wrong with her camouflage?
I chuckle because he has spoken more in this day than he has in the last turn of the moon. She is mine, Nadech. We have resonated.
I have ears, he says dryly. I know this, but how did she get here? Are there more like her?
Zuren babbles and grabs Nadech's braids, and the hunter absently picks the kit up, sitting upright in his bed.
I do not understand how she came to be here.
Nor do I. Until she learns to speak our language, we will not know who she is or where her people are.
Another island, perhaps, with other clans, ones that weren't destroyed by the mountain's death.
He looks hopeful. If that is the case, then it is a strange place where they do not need camouflage to protect themselves. He grunts.
It does seem odd.
As if she realizes she is the center of our conversation, my mate steps forward with the night flyer still perched on her shoulder and smiles at Nadech.
Hi, I'm Loren,
she tells him, patting her chest. Nadech looks at me, eyes narrowed.
Is she trying to tell me something?
Her name.
Oh, of course.
He nods at her and touches his own chest.
Nadech.
Her face screws up, and she looks at me helplessly, then tries to say his name.
Nadech.
The look on Nadech's face is pained, but he nods politely. Their language is strange, I admit to him. She cannot say my name either.
She is unusual looking,
he says after a moment, and when she sits down next to him, he flashes camo as if alarmed.
Her hands are deformed.
I think this is how her people are. She uses all of her fingers, even the extra ones. I find a basket that contains two eggs and a handful of sweet nuts. My stomach hurts at the sight, but I can forage for enough to fill my belly. My mate and the kit must be fed. I take an egg out of the basket, crack the top, and offer it to little Zoran. When the kit begins to eat, I kneel next to my mate and offer her the rest of the basket. Eat, my heart. You need your strength. Lauren takes the basket from me, and I sit down next to her. She frowns at the egg and offers it back to me. For you, I tell her, gently nudging it back toward her. I am hungry. We all are. But it can wait.
Perhaps her kind do not eat eggs, Nedek suggests. He is eyeing the food with avid eyes himself.
When she offers it to Nedek instead of keeping it, he looks to me as if asking permission. I nod at him. While he cannot hunt for himself, I will ensure that he is fed. Perhaps soon he will be out of this sad, lonely state over the loss of his leg, and he will realize he can still do much good for our tribe, however small we might be in number. He takes it immediately and cracks it, sucking down the contents quickly. Zoran giggles, clutching his own egg, and Lauren reaches over to tickle him, smiling. I nudge the basket toward her again. Eat, I say again.
Eat,
she agrees, taking one of the nuts and cracking it like I showed her. She eats one and then offers another to me, and a third to Nedek. I crack mine and offer it back to her, but Nedek eats his. He must be hungrier than he has let on, which means there is even less in the supplies than I thought. Fat One leans over Lauren's shoulder and tries to snatch the contents of one of her nuts. I hiss at him and try to make him leave, but he only snaps at my fingers. Spoiled flyer, I mutter. Lauren chuckles and offers the flyer a bit of her food, and I sigh inwardly. She does not realize how much the pet is fed already. I cannot fault her kind heart, though. She finishes eating and licks her fingers, and as I watch her, my cooey begins to sing. Nedek clears his throat and plucks the empty eggshell from Zoran's tiny fists, doing his best not to draw attention to us.
If you wish to take her out into the jungle with you, I can watch the little one, he tells me.
I am surprised. It is the first time he has volunteered to help out with Zoran since his accident. If you wish, we will not go far.
Go as far as you like, he says in a strange, mild voice.
I know what he is thinking, that we need privacy to mate. I will take her gathering, nothing more.
Do as you wish. I will handle the little one.
He pauses and then glances over at me.
Jashel said there was another female with her, that Arjal took her. Did they resonate?
They had not when I left. His eyes gleam with interest.
That is very good to hear.
Lauren. Cathar's tribe seems very small. I don't see anyone else as we leave, and that seems odd to me. The big hollowed-out tree seems like it could hold a lot more people, as there are platforms and platforms that go all the way up the enormous tree. They might even go all the way back up the canopy, and it seems like a lot of space for three guys and a baby. Something isn't adding up. Have the others gone out? Like the other tribe did when they needed to do some long-distance hunting. Or is there something else going on? We head deeper into the forest, and I make sure to keep a hand on Cathar's waist at all times. He's got a long, flicking tail, but it seems weird to grab that, so I opt for his leafy loincloth instead. Of course, then I'm afraid he's going to surge ahead, and I'll accidentally rip it off of him. Well, okay, so I'm not really afraid of that. I'm more curious what would happen if such a scenario did occur, and I'm ashamed of myself for all the lurid thoughts running through my mind. It seems my cootie has turned me into an absolutely rabid hornball, because I'm already thinking about tonight and if he's going to touch me again. The pudgy little hairless bird accompanies us, riding on Cathar's shoulder and chirping in his ear. He ignores it for the most part, occasionally plucking a large beetle-type bug off of a leaf and handing it to his buddy. I think it's cute. I guess I'm a sucker for a guy with a soft spot for animals. As we walk deeper into the jungle, Kathar points at objects and speaks. It takes me a moment to realize he's trying to teach me their language. I do my best to repeat after him, but I'll be the first to admit I'm a terrible student. I keep getting distracted. Not just by our surroundings or the fat bird thing that perches on his shoulder, but the movements of his body as he strides ever so slightly ahead of me. Is it weird that I'm getting turned on by a guy with four arms and skin that camouflages? I feel like I should blame my cootie, but it's not going to affect my thoughts, is it? Because I keep thinking about him with the baby and how he grinned when it would laugh at him, and how he absently tends to the bird on his shoulder and carefully picks me up when the terrain gets rocky and would hurt my bare feet. He's thoughtful, and he's kind. I don't know if low cootie cares about that, but low human finds it pretty sexy. He cocks his head, and for a moment I worry he can hear my thoughts. The bird thing on his shoulder, Kaki, whose name I really can't pronounce, chirps, and he reaches up and puts a finger against the thing's muzzle, and it goes silent. I go quiet as well, waiting. Kathar pulls Kaki off his shoulder and transfers him onto mine. The little claws dig into my skin and I wince, but give him a curious look. He puts the finger to his lips again, and then pulls me nearer to the closest tree. When he's satisfied with where I'm standing, he drops his basket, pulls out a knife that looks as if it's made from a wedge of flint, and grins at me. That's the only warning I get before he camouflages to the same color as the shadowy leaf patterns on the ground, and in the next moment, his leaf loincloth drops. He stalks away naked, and my eyes cross from trying to follow him. All I can make out are shadow-mottled buns and the flex of his arms before he disappears into the greenery. I guess he's hunting? I pick up his discarded loincloth and basket he left behind. Kiki nudges at my cheek as if begging for treats, and I wish I had something to give him. I scratch his head instead, and he closes his eyes, clearly enjoying the touch. Distracted, I jump when the bushes a short distance away rustle wildly. Kaki gives an alarmed squawk of surprise, flapping his wings and hissing in my ear. I yelp again as the thing's claws tear into my skin, and he climbs atop my head, digging into my hair as he tries to find purchase. Even though he has wings, he doesn't seem to be big on flying, preferring to walk all over me. Great. I'm a bird owner, though. I know that if I calm down, he'll calm as well, so I do my best to go still and hope that the thing crashing through the bushes a short distance away wasn't a predator.
Loren,
a voice says to my side, and I jump again. This time, Kaki coos and flutters back to Kathar's shoulder, which is, just now, turning back to its normal blue shade. He's standing to the left of me, slowly blending back into his regular color, and as he does, I can make out every rippling muscle. "You startled me," I tell him, all breathless. I can't help but look down, since he's without a loincloth, and I feel a little bolder after what happened between us last night. Or maybe I've just decided to give in to my inner hoe. Whatever it is, I stare. A lot. He's definitely hairless, and he's definitely equipped similarly to human men in that he's got a penis and balls, but that's about where the similarities end, because he's got way bigger equipment than I'm pretty sure any human male does. It's long and thick and rests against his thigh. His sack is full, and a darker shade of blue than the rest of his skin, and he's got a strange protrusion just above his cock that makes me wonder if I'm not seeing things. It looks just like, well, just like a particular knob on my favorite vibrator. It does explain why all the other girls are so damn happy and smiley to be stranded here, though. No one's complaining about Resonance because they're getting boned by the gold standard in dicks. And I'm staring.